Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, everybody. How you doing? This is Scott Murray, and with me, as always, my always present co-host.
Except for that one episode when Dustin like.
Well, just Dustin filled in just fine. He did a wonderful job, and I was glad he was there. Now, let's pretend that Dustin and I want to have some fun in bed.
Okay. Well, then you would go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code STATIC, to which you would get 50% off of a single item. They'll also throw in not one, not two, not four, but three free DVDs, free U.S. shipping, and a free mystery gift. And you can hear our guest, Bill Margold, in the background laughing at my awful promo there.
That was terrible, Josh. Real quick, if you go to patreon.com/lostinthestatic, you can become a patron of us. And make basically it's a monthly tip. If you like what you hear and you want to leave us a tip, it's a good way to do it. We've had quite a few people do that so far. And thank you to each Absolutely. And every single one of you. I'm not sure when this is going up, but we may have already had our Google Meetup or Google Hangout.
Yeah, we're a couple point, episodes ahead recording.
Fair enough.
But I don't want to leave our guests sitting and
Please,
waiting.
Please, go right ahead.
Oh, it's all right. I like listening to you talk. It's okay.
Well, as you can hear, we haven't had Bill Margold on in a while, but Bill Margold is a regular on the show, and we wanted to have him back. So, Scott, since I talk to Bill on a regular basis, just on the phone, why don't you talk to Bill for a moment so you can talk to Bill?
I appreciate it.
I talk to Bill on the phone all the time.
Yeah, I don't. I get left out of those conversations, but Bill, it is wonderful to have you back. I got to tell you, you're definitely one of my favorite guests, and my wife, it's hilarious because I talked to my wife on the show, and she's not a big fan of Josh, but
no.
She loves the episodes when you're on. So,
well, I appreciate it. It's funny because your sponsor is Adam and Eve, and I just watched one of their releases, which won all kinds of awards. It's Grease XXX, the quote-unquote a parody, as they put it. The problem with it, and I'm not going to over-criticize because X-rated material is uncriticizable, theoretically. But the only thing I have to say is it's a little bit suspicious that they're parodying something about high school when this industry should be raising the age to 21, although every person in Grease XXX looks like they could be in a penitentiary rather than a high school. A lot of them are a little too old to be mimicking high school years, including the character of Sandy, who has a tattoo running down her spine, and now Sandy's supposed to be the virgin, and another one of the characters looks like zoo material. It was tough to watch because I grew up in Grease. My era is Grease, the 1950s, and this parody thing has worn out its welcome because these people think they're making the very first ones, and I think back in 78, Dracula Sucks was more of a parody and at least had 9 Hall of Famers in it. I seriously doubt that anybody in this movie will ever get into the Hall of Fame unless they're janitors. So, that's a bitter thing to say, but that's the problem with my business. But Josh wants to talk mainstream film.
And, yes.
I have a really good one that I saw that surprised the hell out of me. It was 100 times better than its prequel because this one was accessible, and that was the Captain America movie. I was far more taken with this film because this one is now. Although he's a rather... maybe it's intentional that he basically plays a piece of wood, but there's nothing really good, nothing endearing about him, the Captain America character or the performer who plays him. It's just, it's almost as if he's been zombieized, but maybe that's the way Captain America is supposed to be. He didn't seem that bad in the Avengers movie, because which is the best movie I've seen this decade so far. I love it. or one of the best movies. I like Gravity a lot, too. That's about a whole series of superheroes with ego problems, and I loved the way the movie was made. And I just saw it immediately after I saw it again, and I can't wait to see Captain America again. That's the sign, by the way, of judging a good movie, one that if you could, you'd just stay and watch it a second time. But nowadays, they throw you out of theaters.
See, I have always had a problem with, on the Marvel side, Captain America, and on the DC side, Superman.
The big blue Boy Scout.
Because both of them, to me, just seem like absolute utter Boy Scouts who can do and will do absolutely no wrong. They're both way too noble, and it takes something away from the character for me.
Well, Captain America, it's funny because I was going to do a movie called Flesh Ranch a long time ago, and I was going to have a character who used a garbage pail lid to, like a shield that Captain America used, and when the bullets went through it, he wondered why he was dying. It was sort of a touching role, but of course the movie never got made. Not even sure I would have had as Captain America. Now, in retrospect, probably Jerry Butler would have been really good as that character. But the Captain America character is not one that I've sunk my teeth into because he doesn't seem to have many vulnerabilities, and if he does, they're sort of uninteresting. I do like Black Widow because, of course, I'm crazy about redheads. I like the Hulk because he recognizes his own vulnerability. Iron Man in the first movie, played by Downey, was brilliant, and everything after that's been gibberish. I'm completely tired of that, of everybody around him. He's interesting whatever that kind of character is. I'll tell you the character I dislike the most, and that's Spider-Man. There's something aggravating about that character. Plus, I don't really care about people like sort of animated chimpanzees swinging around on cobwebs. It just too much whoopee and not enough heartache. And I think in order to be a hero, you have to have heartache. So you're sort of right about Superman. I'm not as anti-Superman. Maybe I caught him at a different time in my life. The Batman character has been darkened to the point of absurdium by Nolan. I thought the first of the three was good, and the other two just didn't work. Heath Ledger, of course, basically destroyed the second one by being the object of desire, and the third one was a complete mess. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Who cares about any of that? That man breathing through a mask. I don't want to have to think when I'm reading a comic book. Seeing one come to life. I want to be entertained by the vulnerability of them. And like I said, Captain America, this one worked because he was fighting, well, he was an underdog for a period of time, and I liked the Bucky concept. You know, the great thing in Marvel movies is that they don't end. They have kickers, as I call them. And the Marvel, this new one, had two kickers, and I had a friend who walked out before the credits, and I said, "You're a fool," because that's even more fun to see what kicker they're going to have. And that's so you never leave until the janitors come in and start rattling their brooms and their dustpans. And I've complained about that, by the way. A hint, if you go to a movie and they come in before the movie's over, write to the movie theater and tell them you're unhappy, and they'll send you a couple of tickets.
Hmm.
So just a hint to your listeners. Now everybody will start doing it, but I did the same thing when I went to a theater, the AMC theater. They serve you food in the theater, and I was irate. I said, "Where's the popcorn?" They said, "We'll serve it to you." I said, "No, you won't. I want my popcorn now." And so I watched them go to a kitchen, and the popcorn was among the worst I've ever had in my life. It was so greasy that I didn't even finish it. That's sad because I adore popcorn. Absolutely love it. It brings back, of course, memories of my being considerably older than you. Popcorn for me only cost a nickel when I went to the theater that cost a quarter. none of those things will ever happen in your lifetime.
Well, actually, believe it or not, back in Indiana when I lived there, we had a drive-in movie theater still.
Aww.
And I think it's still in operation, but
you tend to have them back east. I have an affinity for drive-in theaters, not for any sort of sexual reason, but because they're like dinosaurs. And there's one now on the way to Las Vegas called the Skyline Drive-In in Barstow. The last couple of years I've gone there and I hear ghosts of movies as I stand there. And the first year I met a very happy dog that I think was supposed to be a guard dog, but the dog just wanted to play. it was a closed drive-in, of course, and it was winter. And up there is a winter in California. It gets a little cold up there, particularly in the Barstow area, and that dog and I just had a blast. This year, the dog wasn't there, and I got to wonder if somebody took him home, but there's something about an empty drive-in, looking at those screens, because most of them now are at least two screens, and you can hear the ghosts of movie past.
Oh, absolutely. But we have one up here that it still runs in the summer, but they don't show drive-in movies anymore. They show Keanu Reeves movies and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Gravity, and it's like, that's not drive-in movies. You know, you need to show drive-in movies at the drive-in.
Now, the Sky High back in Indiana, they showed those movies on the weekends. Those movies were their money makers. But I got to tell you, on a Wednesday night, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday night, you could go there and, one, you paid by the carload, not by the person.
Yes, by the carload, exactly.
And two, their popcorn was 25 cents for a little, like a quart bag.
A personal bag.
For a little personal bag of popcorn for a quarter. And they showed the old
Corman flicks and stuff.
Yeah, well, Corman flicks and especially the 50s monster movies and stuff like that. And
exploitation movies, or before that, of course, the Corman films, the Attack of the Crab Monsters, which is one that always scared the hell out of me for some reason. I don't know why. I wrote a long story about all the horror movies because last year I was subjected, this is a very convoluted story, but I was subjected to taking the written driving test. And I was so scared of doing it because it had been so many years that I kept on not going. But where the driver's license place was within eyeshot of where the theater I went to when I was a kid growing up in Culver City at the Vista Del Mar, the home that I lived in. So all those movies that came back and were biting at me and caused me to stay up at night, which gave me literal nightmares. And my treatment of nightmares is that I'd go and stand in the bathroom. I lived in a boys and girls home, coeducational. We had a big bathroom, and I'd just turn on the light and stand there until daylight, and then I'd go to sleep. Then I'd be exhausted for the rest of the day, because daylight wipes away nightmares. You don't have them in the middle of the day, let's put it that way. Daylight makes everything serene and comfortable, and you can go on with your life. But I was rattled to my very fiber by nightmarish films, starting with The Thing, by the way, the very first Thing.
The 1951? The 1951 version.
Yes, it's that movie, because it's black and white, and it just sneaks up on you. You don't really... It's a movie of shadows, and you don't really want to go around the corner, because you know if you do, you might never come back. And for some reason, my mother subjected me to that at the Wiltern Theater in L.A., and I have never gotten over that movie. I, to this day, can still see, of course, I guess it's James Arness playing whatever creature it is, but it was the dog and the darkness and the eeriness of that film that really just scared the hell out of me. Yes, I was a child who was raised on EC comic books. That's a whole other thing we can discuss, and I still have some of the originals. And those gave me just gut-wrenching nightmares. The Tales of Terror, the Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt, that kind of stuff. There was a book eventually done on The Seduction of the Innocents by Wertham, showing that the teenagers, well, the youth of America was being destroyed. Their minds were being turned into bowls of jello by those cartoons, and I can attest that mine was as well. I was very susceptible, but I think that's good for a person who would then go on and become creative, which I believe I have. People can always go to my website and read my latest stuff. The BillMargold.com website has some very, very, very interesting stories. Movie reviews that basically are my life story, because the movies are not particularly good, so I write about something in my life and just sort of incidentally mention the movie. Prime example of that is a movie probably neither of you have seen called Don John, the Levitt film, where he spends most of the film jacking off, but then does something that neither one of you probably have ever done. He practices dry humping with Scarlett Johansson, ironically Black Widow, but here she's playing this gum-chewing trollop, basically, and teaser, and so he's dry humping her, and that's something I did a lot in the 1950s, late 50s. Part of my growing up experience, literally.
I will not go into detail, but I'm right there with you.
I would write book reports for the girls in my cottage or term paper, and then I'd be allowed to grind into them. We're totally clothed until I was able to have an ejaculation in my pants. You know, this, and I speak about this with absolutely no embarrassment whatsoever, because who the hell wants to be frustrated? Yeah, I would. They knew, and I knew what I was after, but I'd earned it. Invariably, the term paper or book report got them an A. So, hell, I definitely earned it. Hell, one of my term papers, I did a book report of Battle Cry that must have gone through 50 different girls during their time in high school, and they had a great time just putting up with me until I got off.
Bill Margold, professional book report slut. So,
I could easily be bought for a book report. Term papers required a little bit more, and that would go into the dreadful having to feel a girl up, which is something that I went after until I found out how horribly boring it was. Never been a tit man, ever, because they just simply don't do anything. They're big, bags of flesh. Less tit on a girl, the happier I am. Absolutely.
I'm a butt and leg man myself. Now, I wanted to ask you, what did you think of this year's Oscars and the results?
Now, this could be some racist material that you're not going to want to hear. I sat and I seethed during the Oscars, because I still am still. I don't understand how a movie can win director, editing, and cinematography and not win best film. Gravity is a masterpiece. I wrote my review saying, Houston, we have a classic. Like I say, go to my website, have your readers go to it, or listeners go to it. I think it's one of the best reviews I ever wrote. And I sit there and I'm getting a little bit worried. I simply said in the long run that Hollywood bent over backwards, and that the winning, that worthless 12 Years a Slave, winning the Oscar was a Jody in the woodpile joke.
See, I tend to agree with you myself. As I tweeted,
I liked American Hustle myself.
As I tweeted during the Oscars, I said, I said Gravity deserves to win Best Picture, but simply because of our political atmosphere and the social atmosphere of the United States, 12 Years a Slave will win.
Well, you mentioned American Hustle, which is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movie. The problem is it got caught up between two behemoths, and it had no chance. All those nominations for performances, and in fact, it should have won some of those performances, but you had to give it to the African-American from 12 Years a Slave for getting whipped. And that's exactly what she did. She got whipped, so we had to give her an Oscar, which was very sad because she didn't deserve it.
Jennifer Lawrence stole American Hustle from Christian Bale, from Amy Adams. You know, she stole American Hustle.
Well, no, she didn't steal it. The reason that Jennifer Lawrence is probably the best thing she's ever done, Amy Adams was brilliant, but it was a foregone conclusion that Amy was not going to be getting anything because Amy is going to be a very reliable actress for the rest of her life, but it's going to be tough. And Cate Blanchett, I did not like Blue Jasmine, but I guess Cate Blanchett appealed to an awful lot of people who are exactly that way in Hollywood. They're neurotic. And you were watching a neurotic performance. It's a great performance. Adams was delightful in American Hustle. And Lawrence really, you're right, she does steal the film because we've never seen her like that. But there's no way she was going to win because she had won the year before for that god-awful Silver Linings movie, where she didn't deserve the Oscar.
Well, and because of American Hustle, I now use the term science oven. I don't even call it a microwave anymore. It's a science oven. I seriously say that around the house, and my wife's like, you're stupid.
See, I have to say, just on the whole thing in general, I think Jennifer Lawrence is probably one of the most refreshing personalities that I've seen injected into Hollywood, and I'm happy to see her getting roles, and
because she can dance between like Hunger Games-y shit, and
I
then
don't understand
and then
Hunger
Oscar
Games,
stuff.
And the second Hunger Games was slightly more interesting than the first one, but then it seemed to be truncated. They seemed, for some reason, not show you as many of the kids dying in the second Hunger Games, and then of course they have a real problem with Seymour Hoffman. Is supposed to be in the third one, but man's dead. How are they going to explain that?
They're not. They've already said they're going to replace him with CG. He's still going
to.
His character is still going to be in the third one. They're CGing
as a hologram.
I don't know, but they said his character will still be in the third film via CGI.
Well, that's creepy. Well, the movie, I don't like that series. I don't understand. Who likes it? How can young girls like something that kills them? It's just not interesting. And the second one seemed, in many ways, more in a hurry to get over with. I guess the third one ends happily. I'll have to see it because I'm a completionist. Stupid me, but I have no choice. I have to know. I've got to know exactly how it ends. Obviously, she's going to survive. Katna, whatever the hell her name is.
Katniss.
And I don't know which guy, both of whom are creepy, she's going to wind up with. Hell, she should wind up with Harrelson, quite frankly. I think that would be cool.
But isn't her character underage, so isn't that technically more creepy?
Well, the whole movie's creepy. There's something wrong with that. And you got Stanley Tucci, you got Donald Sutherland, you got Elizabeth Banks. None of these people. This whole thing was written by an absolutely deranged concept. I've sort of given up on these. That's why I'm not going to see Spider-Man until it comes to Netflix. I'm not going to see Divergent until it comes to Netflix. I'm not going to see Transcendence. Maybe I'll never see that.
Transcendence is Lawnmower Man 2, but with Johnny Depp.
Oh, boy.
I even played the trailers back to back. They're the same movie.
Oh, that's not a good sign. Well,
I liked Lawnmower Man 2, but
I adore Depp, and I really, really do enjoy him. But he seems to be sort of throwing his career away. What he needs now is another Pirates. If I hope they're going to make another Pirates, because I enjoy that. I am a big fan of the whole pirate concept, and I watched the episodes of Black Sails, which maybe. Neither of you did, and I got a big kick out of it. I thought it was rather ruthless. And, of course, I'm a big fan of women with bigger balls than men. And in Black Sails, you have Clara Padgett playing Annie Bonney, and she's magnificent. But that also brings up two women in movies this year. One is terrible, but she's amusing as Marie Ennis in that god-awful Sabotage. Oh, my God. Talk about a rotten film. Just gutter trash. But the other one is Eva Green in the second 300 movie. She is tremendous. Now, you've probably both of you are crunching up your noses and saying, those movies are beneath me. Well, I have no choice. And plus, I like Eva Green because I remember her from Dreamers. And also, she was in a couple of other movies. She's in a series now, by the way, that is terrible. This Penny Dreadful. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I saw the trailer for that. The Showtime, right?
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah,
The trailer was just, there was no way I was going to watch it as a series.
And for the
I've seen the first episode. They showed it in advance, Showtime. It's tedious. I hate shows that are on an hour and only give you 15 minutes worth of something to watch.
I caught a leak.
I'll tell you, that perfect example of that is Walking Dead. Walking Dead takes forever to go nowhere.
Oh, like the entire second season of it, the reason I stopped watching the show. I caught a leak of that Penny Dreadful, and I couldn't agree more. And for the record, only Josh was turning up his nose and saying that film was beneath
him. I hated 300, so there was no way you're going to get me to the sequel to that.
The sequel is her. The sequel, in fact, is so much her that I can't remember anything else about the movie except... And I also, although I don't like tits, the woman runs around topless for an extended period of time, and I have to admit, I did not turn away from the screen.
Sold.
She is such a bitch in the film, and so gleeful when she kills people, that I'm sort of sad she dies. She plays the Navy Admiral of the Persian Army, or Persian Navy. That movie, it's very hard to take the film because, well, that's the theater, that's the AMC theater where I was interrupted 3 or 4 times by people serving food to other people. And then, if I want to hear people eating, I'll go to a barnyard. I don't need to hear people, it just doesn't work. Plus, they then proceeded to show the movie in the wrong aperture. To watch this damn thing, and it's not working.
Yeah, when you get the aspect ratio wrong, the projectionist is not doing their job.
Well, he's trying to show it in 3D, but I wasn't watching it in 3D. So the whole thing, until I figured it out, I think I'm sitting through a case of glaucoma. but then they got it back. But I have 2 passes now to go to a couple of other AMC movies, and I'll probably... do that when I feel like I need to run away. Going to theaters, I can walk to Hollywood, and I'm going to go see tomorrow, probably against my better judgment, Bears. Obviously because I am a bear, but I have a feeling I'm going to see the same footage of those goddamn Alaskan grizzlies that I've been watching for a decade.
But at least this one does not have Tim Allen doing goofy stand-up like that Penguin one Disney released earlier this year.
I didn't even know they released a movie earlier this year. Another one of their Wildlife Adventures?
Yeah, it was one of those, except they had Tim Allen as the quote-unquote voice of one of these penguins ad-libbing his way through the movie. The trailer alone was painful.
No, it's tough for me with those kind of movies because I grew up in the 50s and I was treated to something called the Wildlife Adventures. They were these things that started with a paint pot and then it would leak down into things like the Living Desert or the Wilderness Prairie or something. And Bear Country was always my favorite because you had these bears scratching themselves on trees. And I thought that was really cool, but now... these bears look like their privacy is being invaded. And it's very uncomfortable, but I have posed for a picture under a poster of bears, and I'll talk about my affinity for them because I've met a few of them. I've been bitten by a baby bear. I met a good 300-pounder when a lion was brought to Hustler to pose with a naked woman. It brought its bear with him, and he kept on going out to look that his bear was still there, so... I got to meet the bear, and of course, Drea sounded like a bear when I was fucking her, which was amazing because I had heard a bear that I'd hugged in December, and then in July, Drea sounded exactly like the bear. We were known as the Ma-Pa Bear of porn during her time with me. I'm going to go see it tomorrow, and it's almost like a celebration. I'm going to walk up to the El Capitan, and see it at 12:35, and then I'm going to come home, and at 4 or 5 o'clock, the draft, first round of the draft starts. So it's like playing hooky from life for an entire day.
Nothing wrong with that. Hey, no. I wanted to ask you about Justified. I know you watch Justified.
Oh, I worship Justified. I think that Justified is to me sort of the strange way of putting it, sequel to The Shield, because it's about essentially corruptible lawmen. They'll do what's necessary to get the job done. And as good as Raylan is, Raylan twists and bends the rules. Now, I know you're going to think, well, there's going to be a showdown, obviously. It's been coming since the first season, and I worship Walton Goggins from The Shield, where I first discovered him. And I do not believe, and I'll say it now, and maybe when it ends next year, I'll come back on the show and we'll talk about the final chapter. Neither one of the characters will die. And in fact, Goggins will be back with the little blonde girl when it's all over, because she's just sort of between the proverbial rock and the hard place right now. And Raylan will do the right thing. There's no way that Boyd Crowder is going to be eliminated at the end of that series.
I don't know. They've kind of written Boyd into such a corner, there's almost nowhere he has left to go at this point.
But he is absolutely a man who survives in corners. Boyd Crowder's derivative character, and now this will take you way back, and neither of you will ever even heard of this series, Boyd Crowder is a character from an old television show called Stony Burke with Jack Lord, and the character was played by Warren Oates. His name was Vess Painter. Now, both of, you know, being good boys, you should run to your Netflixes or whatever you can find old series on, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, Warren Oates is a good actor, too.
Well, of course, but this was Warren Oates back in 1963. And he really hadn't, you know, put his mark on into our minds at that point, although I believe Ride the High Country is 62, so he had sort of impressed me, but he would go on to do bigger and better things, and of course it's part of the Gorch brother, one of the Gorch brothers in The Wild Bunch, which is my, I guess, one of my two favorite all-time films, the other being High Noon. But the roots of Boyd Crowder is Warren Oates' best painter. Trust me. And, okay, of course, what is Boyd Crowder but essentially Shane Verdell to Mackey's Vince Mackey?
I kind of see that, but I don't think they're the same character, really. I do see a confrontation coming, and I see Boyd probably dying.
That's ridiculous.
Probably at Ava's hand. I think Ava will be the one that kills him.
Oh, why
that's
would Ava
my
kill
call.
Him? For what possible reason?
Because everything that's bad in her life is because of him. Even though she loves him, it's everything that's happened to her is his fault.
Josh, I see
they're
one.
Linked, they're linked into eternity.
Josh, I see
it'll
one.
It'll be a happy ending. it's an interesting show. They're sort of running out of people to kill. In fact, I honestly believed that Raylan's boss was going to die this year, and you would have shed a tear, and that would have been the end of him. But it's a good show. It's a smart show. Of course, the man who created the concept, Elmore Leonard, is dead.
Yeah.
So now what do you do? Who's going to write those last 13 episodes or 16 episodes or whatever they do? And you know, on that station, FX, they sort of cheat and go over an hour. If you paid attention to them, they go sometimes 75 minutes, sometimes 85 minutes. Now, FX also has another show that I'm caught up in, was very reluctant to get attached to, but now I'm anxious to see where they go with it, and that, of course, is Sons of Anarchy.
Which is also going into its final season this year.
I know, and I'm going to be. And to me, when a television show ends, I'm losing a friend. Of course, my favorite television show, and we should all talk about this, those of you need to name yours. My favorite show of all time is Hill Street Blues.
I'm on board with that. Hill Street, it deserves its place.
It just took me into a different area. It caught me at a time that I was totally susceptible to the friendships on the show, the performances on the show, and there's an interesting story I can tell about it, but I want to hear, well, is that your favorite show of
yeah,
all time?
Yeah, it's either that or Max Headroom, which I know you didn't like. I made you
watch.
Oh, I
couldn't
and
even get
you
that.
Didn't...
That thing was intolerable. I had no idea what I was even watching.
Scott, what would be your pick for that?
You know, I'm a huge geek, and there's been a recent series that has just absolutely caught me and held on to me like you wouldn't believe. Now, Bill, did you ever happen to catch Cosmos back when
Sagan?
Thank you, Carl Sagan hosted it.
Of course not. No, that just I guess you people have less to do in Wisconsin.
It was Carl Sagan's Cosmos was fascinating and informative and put me to sleep in 5 minutes every single episode. Well,
uh-huh.
they've brought back the series Cosmos, and the host they have now is a gentleman by the name of Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Right.
And Neil deGrasse Tyson is second to Bill Nye, I think, the greatest science educator that has ever lived. And it is such a fascinating show. And again, I'm a huge geek, and if I'm not learning something on TV or learning something in the background, it's wasted time. And I absolutely adore the rebirth of Cosmos.
Well, would you have
now? That's on Sunday nights, right?
Yeah, it's on Fox after all their animation stuff.
Well, of course, Simpsons is one of my favorite shows of all time as well. But I have many things to do on Sunday night, including Good Wife, which is a wonderful series. It's my most adult series. Of course, Game of Thrones, which I still haven't figured out all the players. Mad Men, which is another show that I tend to identify with because it was my era. And I think it's been overanalyzed. The biggest problem with Mad Men is that they overstudy that show and try and tell me what I'm watching when I read these articles. And I'm saying, oh my God, I don't think these people are having any fun with this show. But I can understand Cosmos. Well, how old are you?
Well, I'm 40.
Well, okay, since I'm 30 years older, I went through all of that with Hemo the Magnificent in high school.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to really be taught anything by television, because television is supposed to be, for me, an escape. It's been a great friend. I've been watching it in grainy black and white. It started with me with Milton Berle and a show with Walter Cronkite called You Are There.
I remember that.
Of course, Jackie Gleason. So I have an advantage or maybe disadvantage of having watched a lot more television than both of you put together, because my stuff was chosen for me in the 50s, at least for the first few years. I got Omnibus. I got, of course, I got the Oscars, the very first televised Oscars.
Which, Twilight Zone, I'm sure.
Well, Twilight Zone, wonderful, wonderful. I finally caught up with the missing episode, the one with Neville Brand and George Takei, the Gardner episode, which a friend of mine provided for me, because I guess it's on the uncut series. All the ones are out. Twilight Zone is a masterpiece. Well, Sterling was a masterpiece. Come on.
I have to lean in that area, though. I'm a more of an Outer Limits guy than a Twilight Zone. I love Twilight Zone. I adore the Outer Limits.
Well, yes. And the Outer Limits, how old are you?
I'm 40 as well. Scott and I are.
So
Scott is
about
6 days older than me.
When you were 10 years old.
Yeah.
Hell, you know, that's Twilight Zone was almost nightmarish. That thing with those ants with the big eyes, the Xanti warriors, disturbed.
The Xanti misfits. That was an Outer Limits, actually.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Outer Limits.
And they actually killed Bruce Dern at the beginning of that episode. The Xanti misfits killed Bruce Dern.
Yes, they did. You know, there's an episode of that, The History of the Outer Limits, which was on right after, by the way, Stoney Burke. on Channel 7, 1963, I believe.
Yep, Outer Limits is 63 ABC.
And those two shows, all both, of course, black and white, Outer Limits had an episode that never got shown. Because the first one was one with Cliff Robertson, if I'm not mistaken, about some kind of thing coming through a radio station.
Yeah, that was the pilot.
I remember that, and I can remember a lot of Outer Limits episodes. The one I particularly liked was the one with Martin Landau, where he goes back to change his own past.
The Man Who Was Never Born.
Oh, that just ripped my guts out. Shirley Knight's in that. And I just absolutely wept because he had to kill his own future.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just brilliant. And, of course, everybody will wax eloquent about Robert Culp. I think he's in two of them, in fact. One of them with the finger that held an entire world or something.
Demon with a Glass Hand, written by Harlan Ellison.
Right. And then he's also, however, in the episode where he plays a monster that fails, that dies, and they're trying to scare the world away from annihilation.
I think that might have been Keepers of the Purple Twilight, but I might not have the title for that one right.
Well, that was a great, great series. The first year, it seemed to wander off the beaten path, or the path, literally, by the second, and I think only had two seasons. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it only had two. Well, actually, not even quite two. The second season was cut off early. They only had like 20 episodes that season. And this is back in the days when a TV season was 27 episodes for the listeners.
At least, or sometimes 32 episodes, and when they really did have summer replacements.
Yeah.
Now they replace with series. I have a great affection for Outer Limits, because there was a really good one that I'm still a little bit suspicious of the ending of it, where they were able to supposedly remake the president. Sidney Blackmer, I believe, is in it. It's one where the mask is made. And
100 Days of the Dragon.
Yes, you're not exactly sure if he has indeed, if the good guy is if we've won or if we've lost. They left it up in the air. In my opinion, it's an open end. And I really like that. I like the show, but I was going to tell you, in the lore of Outer Limits, the very first episode that was supposed to have been shown was apparently about homicidal house cats, and it never got shown.
Well, and the original title of The Outer Limits even was Please Stand By. But then in the era of actual newscasts, they thought, okay, that might actually scare people in the way we don't intend to, so you have to change the title.
There is nothing wrong with your TV set. We adjust the controls. And Dominic Santieri wrote the music, if I'm not mistaken. It was just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And there's an episode in that with Warren Oates with those sand monsters.
Yes, where they're on Mars.
Yes. You know, we can talk. See, this is it. We're lucky enough to remember all of this kind of stuff. And it just, television has been a tremendous friend. It's been a comforter. It's been a provider. Here's a question. What do you think is the most dramatic moment, historically relevant dramatic moment you've ever seen on TV? Let's see what you both say, and then I'll tell you mine.
If we're talking fictional,
in reality, yes.
I'm probably, I mean, considering the age I was, I watched the Challenger blow up live.
So did I.
You know, but I was, let's see, that happened, what, in 86? So Scott and I were 11.
Yeah.
I got mad at the Challenger blowing up for a very strange reason. It prevented me from seeing an episode I was expecting to see on NBC of Family Ties that morning. I got mad because they preempted it for the Challenger, and I said, well, hell, that's not the first one that's the first one we get to see blow up, but I suspect other ones went the same way. I've never been a man enamored with going to space. We have enough to deal with down here.
See,
so
I'm
now okay. Yours is a Challenger. It's interesting that you would use that because, well, let's see. What's next?
See, I'm the exact opposite of you. At age 11, I was a huge space geek. I had gone to space camp and everything like that. So the Challenger blowing up was absolutely heart-wrenching to me. But I think the moment that really changed me was actually a behind the scenes moment, because I was working at a channel in Evansville, Indiana in 2001.
September 11th.
I was figuring you'd say that, although I expected you, since you're a space fan, you would have said the walking on the moon.
Well, I wasn't alive around
for that.
Yeah,
so.
That was about 10 years before I was a thought in my father's head.
So it's tough for me to
it was actually only 6 years before we were born.
Everybody isn't as old as I am.
Yeah, it's terribly sorry. But when the moment that really hit me on September 11th wasn't even the actual events. It was the fact that we had a newspaper reporter in the TV station that happened to be doing a story about news people coincidentally. And so it was turned into an essay on how we handled this great tragedy in a newsroom. And I kid you not, as he was taking photos, the lead anchor man at the time looked down at his camera, realized he was going to have his picture taken as we were all watching monitors of what was happening. He said, "Just a moment, sir," ran back to his desk, grabbed some fake tears, and just streaked his face.
Oh, Jesus.
And then
really?
Smacked his cheeks so it looked like he was crying. And he said, "Now you can take the photo."
Oh.
Well, I'll tell you the story of 9/11. I got a phone call, woke me up. Say it's like 7:14 or something here, or 7:41 or something. But I got up, and one of my production managers, in fact, my best production manager, Brian Sebastian, says, "Turn on the TV." And I turn it on precisely at the moment that the second plane slams into the other building, and I said, "That's the best special effect I've ever seen." He said, "No, it's real." And so I watched. And then I said two things, and these are two of my most cryptic comments. First of all, I said, "This is all about a three-letter word, O-I-L.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
And then
I said something even more cryptic, and this is where both of you come in. I'm glad that at that point in my life, at this point in my life, I'm 57 years old and not 17.
Yeah.
And when that, you can read whatever you want.
And see, I was 30. I was almost 30 when that happened. So I'm glad I wasn't in high school for that. I'm glad I was an adult
when
that happened.
Well, you kids, and I say both your kids because you're in your 40s, you've got a long way to go and a lot more suffering than I'll ever have. You're both doomed.
Well, we're all doomed.
No, but you're really doomed to paranoia, to loss of privacy, to police state, and we basically have we're living through 1984 now. Big Brother not only is watching, he's listening to this as we're doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Hart Fisher and I talk about that all the time. But, you know.
But let me tell you mine.
Okay.
Where television, and it's not Kennedy, that was a whole other, that's on my site, you can read what I went through there. This is much more interesting because it took almost the whole day. It was O.J. Simpson and the Bronco ride.
Oh, 94, huh?
That knocked the hell out of me. I it began when I was in the Valley working for Seymour Butts doing one of his either sleaze please or butt watches. I listened all the way home, came home, and it was on, and there was no way I was even going to go piss. I did not want to miss what I thought would be the inevitable ending of it with the back window blowing out with his brains.
Yeah, I was surprised that one didn't end in a hail of bullets myself.
But when the guy who gave him the ride, who died later on, his lineman friend. I met him a Friday night after that at an adult industry venture, and I said to him, "You are the AC, Al Cowlings. You, sir, are the absolute definition of friendship." I told him that twice. I was told not even to pay attention, one of the X-rated kingpins had invited him to our dinner dance, and I said to him, "You, sir, are the absolute definition of friendship." I shook his hand. Big man, lineman for the Buffalo Bills. That, to me, is the most intense television coverage I've ever witnessed. Television really, really, really. And, of course, I think it had to do with the fact that I knew everywhere the car was going. It was all landmarks I'd been over many, many times. When they got to Brentwood, I sold dog food in Brentwood. I knew the streets they were on. And I was drained by the end of that day. I think I must have sat there. I stood there. I didn't even sit down. I just stood and watched it. And I was so relieved. Well, I have a whole go off on a tangent feeling about what that was really all about. Let's put it this way, and this will really piss off your listeners. I don't think OJ did it.
I think he did. I'm not going to agree with you on. I think he absolutely did it, and his actions, you know, despite what the racist cops did, it was clear he actually did it.
Well, I'll tell you this much, and this is more. When Holiday was alive, he would say I had Margoldian theories. I think he was there, and it was done as a warning to him that he would be next. This will require you to look into his life at that period of time. The other poor schlub who came along was just, you know, sort of grotesque frosting on a cake that was already dead. What I really hated about all of this is that son of a bitch's parents sued Simpson. How the hell does a parent sue for a dead kid? What's that all about? That money I would burn if I was given it. There's something totally inhumane about it.
It's pure unadulterated human greed at that point.
Well, there should be no greed mixed with death.
No, there shouldn't, but it's, you know, the parents saw, hey, our kid's dead. OJ, you know, in their mind, did it. How can we profit?
But OJ, I don't believe he did it. I don't honestly believe he did it. I have a number of theories, and I don't know if they'll ever be proved while I'm alive, but people hate me for my theories. I have my theory about where HIV came from, that it was a chemically bred form of eugenics, that the government's created it to rid the world of factions that nobody would care about, homosexuals, intravenous drug users, and minorities. Now, I'm getting all this in because hopefully you won't edit this.
No, we do not edit this show. We do have to wrap up, though, because we only got 2 minutes left, though.
All right, well, this is fun. It goes real fast. Your co-host never says anything, which is sort of sad.
Well, I'm riveted by listening to you two.
He's just listening and letting, because you and I talk all the time, so we have a rhythm worked out.
All right. Well, again, I'm honored to be able to do these. I wish there was more that I could lead you to, as far as I'm going to probably wind up with my own show now through XXX Porn Star Radio. I've decided I need to do a couple hours a week called Hysterex, where people call in and ask about the past, because there is no present and the future is bleak.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll call into that.
Well, I don't even know how any of that works. I'm very, very, very simple-witted when it comes to any form of technology. My Himalayan cat, now dead, Samson, I guarantee you, knew more about my computer than I did.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill, when you do get around to figuring out exactly where that is happening and everything, keep us posted. We will definitely send some people your way, and I know I'll have a question or
listening.
Two, so yeah, definitely.
XXXPornStarRadio.com. Take a look at the website. Within a month or two, I'll be on it regularly. Every week, I'll do 2 hours.
Wonderful, and I hate to do this, but we got to wrap up for just a moment. Don't go anywhere, Bill. We'll be right back, but Thank you all for joining us. Again, go to patreon.com/lostinthestatic, and you can help us out every month. And go to 1201beyond.com. Check out our shirts and stuff. We'll see you guys next week.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.